put a land deal together, how do you make your closing go as simple and painless as possible?
Well, stay tuned to the latest Well-Grounded podcast to find out. This is Randy Conan from the Red River Farm Network.
And this is Jason Menke, farmland and beetstock broker at Acres and Shares.
This podcast brings together experts from the world of agriculture, real estate, and we'll talk about farmland values, industry trends, and the economy.
In this edition of Well-Grounded, our guest is Aaron Rosten. He was born and raised in the big city of Plummer, Minnesota, graduated from the University of North Dakota with a financial management degree with an emphasis in real estate.
Rosten began his career as a short-term loan officer for UND before going to work as an abstractor for Grand Forks Abstract, where he worked his way up the ranks and now manages the three title team offices in Grand Forks, Crookston, and Thief River Falls. He's married with two boys, ages 12 and 10, and resides in Grand Forks.
Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you.
So before we get into closings and abstracts and all that sort of fun stuff, you're from the big city of Plummer, and you know this is maybe an inside joke if you didn't grow up in eastern North Dakota or northwest Minnesota, but what's Plummer famous for?
I'd have to probably say the Plummer dances back in the day. We had a community hall that put on fundraising dances, and there was high school kids and even some college kids that attended from many different areas. Kind of similar, if you're familiar, to like the Arthur Barn dances that they still do nowadays. That's kind of probably our claim to fame, and I get most people bringing that up when I say I'm from Plummer.
Sure, was the Plummer dance. It was the place to go for the young kids.
It was the hangout. Yep.
Yeah, and they were a lot of fun back in the day. When did they shut down?
I don't know for sure. For our senior, which I graduated in 1995, we did a fundraiser as a Plummer dance, and they charged admission, and we made a bunch of money. So it was still pretty popular in 95.
Well, let's get back to business. So as a real estate broker, closings are a vital part of my business. And I've been fortunate in my 22-and-a-half-year career. Have worked with Rachel Efta from your office for about 10 years. And although she was a bit too shy to join us today, I did want to give her a shout out for the work that she's done on my behalf. And I think other brokers would speak highly of her as well.
Well, as a title office, Aaron, can you give us a 30,000-foot view of what a title company does?
Sure. The thing I always like to start with is popular to belief. We don't just push a button and all of a sudden all the research is done. Title company does a number of things. Our office is a licensed abstract company, so we provide abstracting services and updates. We also do search products for banks, owners and encumbrance reports, which tells you the owner and any liens against the property. And then the main scope of our business is mostly the closing and title insurance services. So what that entails is issuing either an owner's policy or lender's policy of title insurance at closing. What goes into that prior would be all the research that we have to do on the specific property, as well as the buyer and the seller. We have to search their names for judgments, tax liens, child support liens, all that good stuff. Once we get to closing, then we're kind of the third party that's in charge of intaking the funds and then distributing the funds where they belong. So paying off loans, cutting checks to sellers, figuring the bank charges, etc. Once the file is closed, we record documents at the county recorder, and then if there's a title insurance policy, we issue that title insurance policy.
Let's talk about abstracts. Occasionally I'll visit with landowners who don't know what an abstract is. So could you give us just a simple definition? And this might be something I take with me as I visit with people. I try to tell them it's just the publicly recorded documents that are in one bound document, legal size paper, and typically they're trifolded, but there's got to be a better way to explain it.
Yeah, really, you're right on the money. It is a history book of the property, so it's an entry form of every recorded document at the county recorder's office of a specific piece of property. So if you went to the county recorder's office and wanted copies of every documents recorded against a property, you'd have a 3-foot stack high of documents and to review. So the abstract's been around forever, but I believe, it was created in order for attorneys and title examiners to have a more concise entry format of a document that they could examine. So it's going to start in the 1800s when the state became a state, and it's going to start. The first entry is typically either a receiver's receipt or a United States patent from the United States of America to the first owner, and then it just tracks that chain of title all the way to current. It includes any mortgages, easements, anything that's recorded against the property. So,
kind of a fun side note, Aaron, Randy, is this would have been probably 10 plus years ago. My grandpa was in a nursing home, and we needed to sell the property. They had a quarter that had been homesteaded in the family, and as my grandma was looking through her safe, in addition to finding the abstract, she found the homestead certificate, and she passed away in August, and my aunt had not only the homestead act for or certificate for like my great grandpa, but also like my it would have been his brother. So I've got two certificates that I'm going to have framed and probably, you know, come up with some language to tie it in. But it's kind of fun to have that history when it's, you know, tied to your family.
I know when I was going through when I was buying my farm and then selling it later on, it was fun to go through and look at that abstract and see who all owned it mm-hmm. prior. It's an interesting historical document.
Yep, it's still the favorite part of my job. I still work on those. That's how I started in the business. And just when I graduated college, I went to work for Grand Forks Abstract, and I didn't have a computer. I didn't really have a desk. I went back to this old file room with these old books that you'd creak when you open them, and dust would come out, and you'd have to look up those old documents. And it's kind of like putting a puzzle together, and it's very interesting stuff. Yeah.
So do you need to have an abstract if you're going to sell land in the Dakotas and Minnesota?
So North Dakota is technically an abstract state. So the statute is a little bit vague, but you're supposed to have an abstract continued by an abstract company that holds a certificate of authority in the specific county where the real estate is located. So that's kind of the rule of thumb. Grand Forks County, where we do business, is a little bit different. Couple different reasons. Some people say a lot of those abstracts were maybe lost in the flood, so they do some title insurance. But for the most part, ag land still in this area in North Dakota is abstracts are typically updated. And for that matter, Minnesota is not an abstracting state, so there's not a requirement for an abstract. Our little region, we run an office out of Crookston, Minnesota, that covers Polk County and Thief River Falls, which covers Pennington and Marshall counties in Minnesota. And still for ag and even some residential, people still like to have that abstract, but it's not a requirement in the statutes in Minnesota. So
yeah, there aren't many farmers that don't like to physically hold their abstract and feel like they, you know, they own it. But
yeah, well, if they don't have an abstract currently, can they start one?
Absolutely. Yep. It's just a history book, so it's not like a title to a vehicle or anything like that. All it is a history book of what's recorded. So we can create a new one every week for the same piece of property for a year. You know, there's not an original abstract of title. So yeah, we can create a new one. Otherwise, they can be updated or whatever is necessary.
So in Minnesota, you don't need an abstract. And you've mentioned earlier on in the, you know, 30,000 foot view, title insurance, title searches. So could you just, you know, take a few minutes to explain a title search, title insurance, and what are the costs associated with those?
Sure. So in order to do a title insurance commitment, again, in the state of North Dakota, it's typically you still need to examine title, which that could still be an abstract. Or it could be a search of the records, which, like I mentioned, could be a stack of 3-foot stack of documents that isn't typed into abstract form. Once that search is completed or that abstract is updated for the title insurance, we typically have it examined by an attorney. That attorney opinion is then used to produce our commitment. The commitment is a commitment to insure. So the commitment is either to an owner or a lender or both. Typically, lenders require lenders title insurance for secondary market loans, which aren't super prevalent on the ag level, but some lenders, even with ag loans, do require title insurance. The lender's policy of title insurance obviously protects the lender. It protects the lender up to the amount of the mortgage, so that's pretty much all they're concerned with. If they ever had to foreclose, that they would have clear title on that. Once that mortgage is paid off, that title insurance policy is null and void. Quick note, title insurance is not like your auto insurance. It's a one-time premium that's paid at closing. It's not a monthly or yearly premium. So once that policy is null and void, it's no longer effective if there is no mortgage against the property. The owner's title policy, on the other hand, protects the owner, and that protects the owner as long as they own the property. And actually, in theory, if they sell the property, you know, while they own the property or prior to owning the property, they're guaranteed that they had clear title when they got clear title. So
is there a formula on how those policy costs are calculated?
Yep. So it's the premium is based on the amount. So it'd be the sales price for the owner's policy or the amount of the mortgage for the mortgage policy. So, and it's a stepped up kind of premium. So North Dakota and Minnesota has different rates, even different underwriters. We write for several different underwriters have different rates, but typically like the first 50,000 is the highest premium. Cause if you were to have a claim, you know, to have a claim in excess of $50,000 probably wouldn't be super likely. Of course it could be depending on the size of the property, but that first 50,000 is a higher price. The next 50,000 is less. The next 50,000 is even less, so it kind of gradually steps down as it, in pricing is kind of how that's done.
Is there a best? I know the abstracts get updated when you're going to sell property or when you're buying property. Are there other times we need to be thinking about updating those abstracts?
You know, we charge abstracts. As far as charging on abstracts, you're charged per entry. So anytime there's something recorded against the property and we have to make an entry for it, there's a charge. There's also a certificate charge. So every single abstract has to have a certificate certifying that we searched the records from this date to this date and this is what was recorded. So there's going to be fees involved if you don't have, you know, something that you're needing that abstract examined for. There probably really isn't a reason to update it. I mean, we would get paid for it if we did it, but we typically steer people away from that. You know, if you're doing a sale, doing a refinance, doing some planning for your estate, and somebody needs it, that'd be the time when you'd really want to get it updated. If a release was recorded and your mortgage is paid off, it's of record. There's really no reason to pay that fee until, you know, there's something that's being done with the property.
And generally what I've done is, as an example, I've got a few online auctions coming up in November. And in one instance, I have the abstract and I'll drop it off in that specific county next week. In another case, the seller couldn't find an abstract, and typically that takes longer to create. So we've already got the abstractor up in Cavalier County working on a new abstract for the property. What are typical, you know, you've got a variety of offices throughout the upper Midwest. What's an average time frame and cost associated with an update, or, you know, just kind of rule of thumb or ballpark?
Sure. So in North Dakota, abstract rates are actually filed. They're approved by the legislator. So they're pretty well set. There's the certificate that I mentioned is $150. Each entry is $15. So it's kind of hard to give a ballpark because there could be somebody that's held this and never taken a mortgage out and there's been nothing recorded. But also in the statutes, an abstract company is supposed to have between 2 and 3 weeks to complete an abstract update. A new abstract can obviously take longer. We typically quote around 4 to 6 weeks for a new abstract to be created. And as far as a ballpark, a new abstract, you're probably looking at $1,000 minimum just yep. because of the, you know, the amount of stuff that even you're not aware of. There's water mortgages and zonings and all kinds of stuff that's recorded against each property. So, I mean, we've seen abstracts in excess of $5,000, but, you know, typical brand new abstract, we usually say start somewhere around the $1,000 range. So
this is kind of a thought just kind of occurred to me. What about like mineral rights? And we don't worry about so much here, but you get out west in the oil fields, what happens then?
Yeah, so there's two different kinds of abstracts that actually can be compiled. The ones that we handle and the ones that are insurable are the surface rights. Mineral rights are a separate, but you can have a mineral abstract created as well based on the mineral records.
So, and then what happens if you can't find an abstract? It just takes out much more time to get a new one made.
Exactly. Yep. It's obviously, if you've got the first 100 years, it's going to take that much less time to create or update that one as it would be to go back to the 1800s and pull every document. So
let's transition to closings. I like to tell my seller clients the closing agent is here to make your life as simple and painless as possible. And that's generally the case because they show up at closing if they're local, and there's a few things to sign, and you know, ultimately there's their check and they're happy. You know, even the process, if folks are out of the area, you know, it's getting an email or a FedEx packet. So walk us through the closing from start to finish and how your staff can make it as simple as and painless as possible for them.
Sure. So as I mentioned, there's either an abstract or a title insurance commitment or an attorney opinion that we go by. We require that we have at least an attorney opinion or a commitment, so we know that if there's any issues that we have to address at closing. Based on one of those, the opinion or the commitment, we go through, and if there's any mortgages to be paid off from the seller, or if it's a refinance on a transaction, we have to pay that mortgage off. We have to track down who's holding that mortgage, get a payoff. We have to make sure taxes are current, make sure there's no liens on the property or any title defects. You know, there could be, you know, one that pops up quite a bit is like estates, if they're done incorrectly and there's, you know, not all the heirs are notified. You know, we have to make sure that all the interests have been extinguished and we're ready for the new buyer to take title. So we kind of start with that, going through our little checklist there of what needs to be done prior to closing. Then we put together a closing statement for the buyer and the seller, which kind of outlines the fees involved in the transaction. We kind of send that out to the agents and the customers to make sure that they're okay with it. The fees are typically split based on the purchase agreement if it's a purchase file. So it's written in the purchase agreement, buyer pays for this, seller pays for this. That type of thing. So we're kind of just a third party following the instructions of the purchase agreement to close the transaction. Once you get to closing, we do have, like Jason said, all the checks cut and ready and the documents ready for signing. There's a few documents that require notarization, so we have to have a notary present that notarizes those documents. We take those signatures. Once we have everything signed, we make sure to have everything correct and in order, and then we disperse the funds on the transaction. Once that's done, we get those documents recorded in the county recorder as soon as possible, which has been sped up with e-recording. We can now e-record in most counties, so we can actually just kind of scan that in into our program and have the document recorded within, you know, several hours rather than several days. So that's kind of what happens.
Are you seeing most buyers, sellers signing remotely, electronically then?
So that's pretty new. With the pandemic, some laws were pushed into effect, and nationally there's some laws on the books trying to get that more common. But we can now e-notarize documents electronically. So there's a little additional charge. We have to set up what's similar to a Zoom meeting. There's questions that are answered to verify who you are, who you say you are, and some of them are tough. There's about five, and you have to answer them within a minute or two. So you have to know where you lived 20 years ago. Sometimes, you know, that's tricky. We have had people that have failed, and we've had to try it again. So, but that's just to make sure everything's secure and we have the right people signing. So that's rather new. We do see it happen more for seller side transactions or buyer side cash transactions. Currently, there's not too many lenders that will accept an e-note or a e-notarized document in their e-vault. So I think it's changing and it's going to be more prevalent. The people that have done it with us really enjoy it, and it's a really slick process. But for the most part, you know, there's most people come to our office to sign. And it's kind of interesting, when we started our process, we kind of thought, you know, oh, the millennials or the young people will be the ones that want to sign remotely. And that's really not the case. It's almost the older people that are living in Arizona for the winter or something like that are utilizing it. The younger people kind of want that experience, want to come in and get the keys in their hands and that type of thing.
I know there's a ton of paperwork, those of us that ever bought or sold a house. Is land different, or is it similar, having the amount of paperwork?
The basic forms that we need recorded are almost identical, but it's all dependent on, you know, if you're taking a loan out for the property, there's going to be a lot more forms to sign, and that's based on the lender and based on the loan program for the lender. The different farm programs have different documents for ag stuff. But for the most part, ag closings are much less burdensome on the signer than the residential loan closings, for sure.
For my role as a broker, the settlement statement is a huge part of the seller closing. You know, for those people that might be listening that have never been through a transaction, could you just kind of go through kind of what some of the common expenses or items are on the settlement statement for a seller?
Sure. For a seller, you know, if you have it listed with a realtor, there may be a real estate commission fee paid to the broker. In addition to that, typically the seller, if there's an abstract updated or a search done, the seller pays for that work to be done. Like I mentioned before, it's specific to the purchase agreement. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's kind of typically how it works. There's usually a closing fee that that's typically split between the buyer and the seller, 50-50. In Minnesota, there's actually deed and mortgage tax that has to be paid. Typically, the buyer pays for the mortgage tax. The seller pays for the deed tax. They don't have that in North Dakota, but there are recording fees, which are considerably less than the tax, that are paid by the buyer and the seller in the transaction. And then, you know, real estate taxes can either be paid by the seller at closing, paid by the buyer at closing, or prorated per the day of closing. So proration would be as of that date. Seller's responsible up to that point, buyer's responsible for the rest of the year, and we prorate those closings. So,
and with taxes, you know, so kind of the rule of thumb, and here again, everything is negotiable in real estate, but the rule of thumb is whoever either farmed it or received the income off the property would pay the taxes. So as an example, for a fall sale, the seller would likely be paying the taxes. You know, if there's CRP involved, something that a payment would be prorated, that's probably where we see more proration with taxes. If land is sold in the spring, then, you know, the buyer would likely pay the real estate taxes for that year. And then the other thing that's kind of unique is you know, North Dakota, we pay our taxes, real estate taxes, in arrears. So, you know, we won't get our 2022 taxes until December. So in some cases, you know, the folks at your office have to, you know, do an estimate based off of the 2021 taxes.
Yep.
Aaron, anything else that we haven't covered, or any closing comments on your end?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if anyone ever has any questions, we're an open office, even if we're not handling the transaction. I mean, we've got a lot of experienced closers in our office that have been doing this a long time. And even myself, I've been now, I can't believe, 23 years in this business. So there's not a lot that we haven't seen, but this morning I had an issue come up that I hadn't seen in 23 years. So you never know what you're going to see. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us.
And how can they reach your office?
We are located at 3374 South 31st Street here in Grand Forks. Like I said, we also have an office in Crookston and Grand Forks. Our number is 701-772-3484 for the Grand Forks office, and we can reroute you to Crookston or Thief River too if that's where the property is located.
Well, our thanks to Aaron Rostin for being part of this conversation.
The Well-Grounded Podcast is a presentation of Acres and Shares and the Red River Farm Network. If you have farmland or beatstock questions, please call me at 218-779-1293.
And you can find this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. It's also available at rrfn.com and acresandshares.com. Until next time, I'm Randy Conan.
And I'm Jason Minke.